Hey, I'm Johnny Lynch. I'm here with Glennon and special guest Clive Cookson. We're here to examine how tropes bleed across movies, video games, and TV shows. This episode, teasers and trailers. Welcome to Dystropia. Episode one. Trailers.
Yes.
Teasers, trailers.
Yes. Do we have to make this, by its very nature, really short then?
Yes, we should, absolutely.
Okay.
Can I see the time? I can. Fantastic. Yes, episode one. I did have a note of like talking about the difference between, because this is across different media, because it's looking at movies, video games, and TV shows, just the kind of evolution of me seeing trailers that were in movies. I would just go to the cinema and you'd see the coming soons.
Yeah.
And it would be up to a 2 minute little vignette of the movie, and it would ruin everything for you. But as a kid, you didn't give a fuck because you had a very short memory, and then you would go and see the actual movie. And then it went to TV spots, and those were little 30-second ones, generally a bit of music, generally just quick cut, bash you over the head with it. And now we're at the very weird part of trailers, or of teaser trailers, where you get online and everyone's going mad because they want to see the new teaser coming out. And I think I remember the first time somebody, the kind of that switch then from TV spots into online teasers, mm-hmm. which was Lord of the Rings in 2001. And my friend left a dial-up modem on all day because he wanted to get the 4 meg trailer, which was, it was the greatest thing ever. The music was great. The visual on it was the grainiest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. But this dude, like, I'm sure every game he ever played his entire life, his name was Frodo. Like, back when, before. But, like, anytime you were allowed to put your name in, he put in his name as Frodo. And when this movie was coming out, he was like, I must see this. Like, had his own homemade Lord of the Rings backgrounds on his computer at the time. So he left it on at, like, 9 a.m. And by 9 p.m. we were sitting around watching. He didn't even full screen it. It was this tiny little window in the middle of his screen.
You couldn't full screen it back then. You'd full screen, and the player would full screen, but it would maintain the original size. That's usually what happened on the older version. Yeah. It's like,
so anyway, that's kind of the interesting thing of, that's to me what, where trailers have come from and where we are now. So with the movie trailers, and I've been looking at ones recently, and they're all sort of running together into that Inception noise and grainy filters, and it they seem like weirdly not representative of the movie. But in a way, it's still very entertaining, because then you go to see a movie and go, that did not sell to me at all.
Yeah, I've noticed that over the last few years, because I pay a lot of attention to stuff like trailers, and because particularly in the last 6 to 8 years, people's attention spans have just been getting shorter and shorter online. Mm. So you really have to grab someone in the first 10, 15 seconds.
Yeah.
It's almost like the, as soon as you open the doors to a club, like, it's like, if the music's shit, people are just gonna, it's as if they turn around and go, nah, fuck this, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
So, I've noticed that film trailers, in a way, have been getting worse.
Mm.
Game trailers have really stepped up, and I suppose, TV spots weren't really a thing outside of America for a long time.
Mm.
The only time I remember, like, when I was young enough, like, seeing TV spots was when I got, like, the special edition DVD box set of something.
Mm.
And it'd show you the TV spots. The little, in America, they'd be like 5 seconds and 10 seconds stuff. But, you know, because otherwise it was something that one of the blokes in RTE had cobbled together.
Yeah, yeah.
And with every offence intended to RTE, it was usually shy. So, showing stuff from the wrong episode. Yeah. Like, you show a trailer like, this Tuesday. And you're like, that was 4 weeks ago. What are you talking about? Like,
You're saying there that TV trailers are getting worse. They're, weirdly,
the film ones.
Films have gotten worse. Weirdly, they've gotten sophisticated, because the trailer that I picked was for Friday the 13th, the TV spot, the 30-second TV spot, because I was going back through lots and lots of trailers that I was looking at, and there's ones that jumped out at me more, but I wanted to get the guy, his name is Don LaFontaine, who is the guy who does In a World.
In a World.
In a World, where love is against the law. There was a brilliant one. In a World, where the sun burns cold. You just love that. So the Friday the 13th one starts off with shh, 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 ka, 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 ka. And he just counts to 13. He goes 1, 2, 3, 4. While you see murders happening on screen,
And he got paid like an insane amount of money for that as well.
I'm not sure if it's true, but apparently when they gave him the footage, there was no script. And I kind of believe that if he's the one who's always pitching in a world, maybe he was writing some of these.
See, he has his own recording studio tacked onto the side of his house.
He does, yes.
He's dead now. He's dead now, sorry. Well, I'm sure the recording studio's still there.
Yeah.
I reckon that was just his thing of like, you know, it got to the point where he's good enough, just sending the clips and
then get something. Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, just let him play. Like.
That one, when I watched it back, I could see the kind of genesis of lots and lots of things, where it was the voice, it was the iconic music, it was the fact that it grabs you. Like, he's just counting and it's that quick cut TV spot. And I was saying that I think movie trailers have gotten more sophisticated because I watched all the Die Hard trailers this morning, and the first one is, you know, he was a cop, and they explain everything. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they go through absolutely everything, and then terrorists, and they explain everything. The second one, it goes, John McClane is back, and then they just do the music.
Yeah.
And then, but they let it play out. By the time you get like to three and the more recent ones, they don't have any voiceover at all. It is just quick cuts things, and they're just basically like, you know how trailers work now. You know what this is. We can show you anything you want, and you know it's a movie. But I just found it really funny that they had to explain what a movie was back in the old ones. Yeah. So it's like, he was a cop. He's the wrong place. Like, they're really holding you by the hand. Please come with me. You don't expect guns. Expect explosions. But that was my one. I decided that the dude who does the voice did Batman and Minority Report and Die Hard and Terminator 2. And it is just, his voice is the trailer.
I think you could build a whole trailer around that guy just on the voice alone.
I want to see, like, was that a piss take, or was that actually one that they did make a documentary about him, and they got him to do his own trailer?
Oh, that's brilliant.
That is amazing.
I think Jerry Seinfeld had one called The Comedian, and they had the dude who was actually dead at that point, but they had his best friend do an impression of him, because he was another voiceover guy, and he was like, in a world. And like, I get out of the booth now. I like it in the booth.
that was a Funny or Die thing. That, like, was it? Yeah, I think it was a Funny or Die one of those. I don't know if it could be because he died. It could be because he passed away. But I've noticed that more and more. And the biggest culprit of this is Guardians of the Galaxy. Is the whole, let's just pick a song that people know, and then just cut to it. Maybe do a cut over it and all the rest, and you know, and that's kind of it. Now, there's nothing wrong with that inherently, but when it's everywhere, it becomes just so annoying. And some of the music choices are just fucking terrible. Also, the studio, like, so you had Guardians of the Galaxy, and obviously just one of the more kind of recent fallouts from this is like, we had the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer, and then Guardians of the Galaxy came out and was a huge hit. And then they had the Suicide Squad trailer, which, with the use of the music and all the rest, they made it seem like it was going to be that same kind of tongue-in-cheek thing. And then they were like, but that's not the film we're making. And Warner Brothers, who are notorious for interfering with the DC adaptations.
Mm.
Like, the bigger the adaptation, the more they interfere.
Mm.
And then they sit around wondering, oh my God, well, why didn't it work? Oh God, we better make sure we fix the next one. And then, like the ones they left alone were the cartoons, which are, like, to this day stand up as being the most popular. And they got three seasons of Superman, I think it was, five seasons of Batman the Animated Series, five seasons of the JLA, JLU cartoon, all regarded as incredible versions of the stories and the characters. The Kevin Conroy voiced Batman has kind of become the defining Batman.
Yeah.
But they didn't really interfere with that, you know. The TV series for the CW, Arrow and Flash and stuff, occasionally they're coming, we think this will work, but apparently they're meant to be very stand-backish. I know someone who works on it, they've been stand-off quite a bit. And then the films, they're like, oh, we've all this test audience, oh my god, someone on the internet said that was a bad idea, let's change it. And it's just like, and then it goes tits up, or else they just go, Zack Snyder, what do you want to do? And he goes, well, like, obviously, you know, Superman is renowned for being like the blue and red and American colors, and, you know, even his nickname in the JLA, a few of the characters, Big Blue, awesome, so what do you want to do? I'm going to bleach all the fucking colour out of the film. There's going to be 17 million windows smashed, and that's kind of going to be the last 20 minutes. It's just going to be smashing windows. Because I once...
Because fuck windows.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, of course, yeah. Because I once knew someone who was killed by windows. So, yeah, this is my... And they go, okay, that's fine. And it's because he bleached the colour on his first few films. And then, like, I think it's almost...
It's stylized,
like,
okay.
It's, yeah, but, like... Yes, the stylized doesn't mean good. Like, you know, polka dots are stylized.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
On the Suicide Squad one, it's the first movie I ever saw, which I knew it was a bad movie, but it didn't make me angry or sad or anything like that. I went into, like, detective CSI mode. I was like, I need to know why this is so bad. It's like coming across a body and going, I must investigate. And started looking...
Why did you have to investigate? It's the point where the Joker shows up and you're going... Oh, right. Well, I don't know if that's just because I know the Suicide Squad stories and stuff, and it's like...
No, but like, investigate
it. I was barely in it as well. It was mainly flashbacks.
Yeah, no, it's purely there because people have to understand, Batman!
Yeah.
Batman means Joker, and it's like, oh, for fuck's sake, like... It's like this whole thing of, like, if somebody turned to me and went, like, you know, we want you to write the next Batman film, and I'd be like, great. I need you to sign a piece of paper right now to say I don't have to explain the origins of Batman. Because nobody should have to fucking explain the origins of Batman right now.
I have a long-running joke of, like, I've seen Batman's parents die so many times at this point. I think I've seen Batman's parents board my own parents together.
It's just ridiculous, though. It's like, I don't need... Fine, Green Lantern, not everyone's going to know the origin. Fine, Aquaman, not everyone's going to know the backstory.
Yeah.
But Batman and Superman, I really don't need to know how they got to where they
are. Superman's name is his backstory. He's a Superman.
Yeah, it's...
Spider-Man too. That's one that's been done countless times as well, isn't
it? Yeah, they just don't want to drop the license. It's like they're basically playing a game of... It's like they have a... You know when you were like 5 years old and
trying to keep a balloon from...
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
That's exactly it. You got to keep the balloon up in the air, like, because if it lands, then Marvel come along and go, no, our balloon, and just walk off with it. The film trailer for me, the only one I could think of in the last few years that really kind of grabbed me was the one for The Witch.
Hmm.
Because it's got, what's his name, Ralph Ineson's voiceover. Because he's got that really deep, like, and it's like, every time he says anything in the entire film, even when it's to one of his kids or his wife, it's like super threatening.
Yes.
You just agree with it. You're just, yes.
I'm going to go out and chop wood.
Yeah.
Like, you should. Fuck that wood.
Yeah. But it's got that voiceover. And then, like, the music is very discordant on purpose.
Mm.
And then you have the son Caleb's prayer coming in over it. And when it's all feverish and all the rest. And it just builds and builds and builds. And I was like, that's really good. Because straight away, it's kind of it's evoking what the film is trying to do.
Mm.
And at no point... And it could be to do with the setting, but there was no, you know, 70s disco hit playing over back. Then again, I'm sure someone's already made that trailer online, but that was kind of the one for me that I thought was actually quite well done over the last few years. Again, I think they're getting worse. The point where I kind of wrote off anything to do with any of the Warner Brothers films.
They give away way too much in the trailers nowadays as well. Like, for instance, Batman versus Superman pretty much gave away everything in the movie.
Yeah.
They didn't leave any surprises whatsoever, and that annoyed me, personally.
Mm.
Well, no, it saved me, like, £9, but...
Well, yeah, I still had to go watch it, but, you know...
No.
Put the trailer on, turn up the colour settings, this is lovely!
There you go.
Yeah. But they have the opposite problem to Marvel. I don't know if you saw that thing where somebody was saying that the Marvel films were kind of washed out because they don't colour correct properly.
Mm.
So there's no true black in a Marvel film.
Right.
And they actually did it that's why it looks like it's almost like a TV thing.
Yeah.
And when somebody changed it and it actually pops it better. But with the Warner Brothers ones, it was coming up to it was the day before the trailer for Batman Superman went up. And according to my Facebook mention thing, it was about 2 years ago today.
Hmm.
And what it was all it was the trailer comes on and it's 12 seconds. And it's got a shitty Inception noise ripoff. And it shows the Batman suit with no one in it. It shows the Superman suit with no one in it. It shows their two logos separately. It shows their two logos overlaid on each other. And then it shows the date for the next day, which is when the actual trailer was coming out. So it was a teaser for a trailer for a film.
Oh,
now, I wasn't interested in the film to begin with.
Yeah.
So, like, and everyone was like, oh my god, it's amazing. And I'm like, seriously, like, just drink your Kool-Aid and fuck off. Yeah. You think this is good, like. And then there was the trailer for, what you call it, came at the same time. The same day, it was later on that day, was...
Terminator?
No, Star Wars.
Star Wars.
Oh.
The Star Wars trailer came out. Now, I actually, like, anyone who knows me will know, I'm not a fan of the George Lucas Star Wars films. I really like the universe that the films are set in. I really like the games, all that type of stuff. And I think the films have been a lot better since he was fucking removed, right? Which is great, because George Lucas just has a negative impact on great franchises. Indiana Jones is the prime example, right? But the trailer for that came out, and I watched it, and I went, okay, fine. That fails completely as a trailer, because a trailer is meant to get people interested who wouldn't normally go and see something.
Mm.
It's to draw attention to something, and the two main points are draw attention to and build hype for. That's kind of the same thing, but also get people who weren't interested.
Mm.
Now, this was Star Wars. You did not have to build hype for it.
No.
You did not have to draw attention to it. Yeah. So point one was moot. And number two, I didn't know anybody who wasn't interested beforehand who was interested after seeing that trailer. Now, when I went to see the film, months later, I was like, that was actually quite good. I liked that.
Hmm.
In a weird way for me, someone who hates George Lucas as much as I do.
The Force Awakens?
For me, that was... I had a joke with one of my friends of how that was... For people like me who aren't fans, that was our new hope.
Yeah.
Because it was like, now that Lucas isn't there, it could actually be good. Like... Fuck nostalgia. It could actually be a good film. Like.
Yeah.
And it was. But the trailer did nothing other than fan service. Yeah. It didn't have to do that on the Star Wars trailer. Now, I get that they were like, oh, but the fans are why it's come back and all that. It's like, yeah, I get that. But the fans were going to go and see it 5 or 6 times no matter what.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a guy I know who has racked up counts of 20 plus on the last two.
Yeah.
Like, he's seen both of them more than 20 times in the cinema.
Wow.
And... I'm like, but that's what fans are like.
I love people like that. That they, you go into their house and they've got like lightsabers just sitting in place. In their bathroom, they've got like Darth Vader shampoo. And stuff. Just like, I just really like it. It's like, that's fine. You can like whatever you like.
Yeah, that's great. Like, and but it's not even that. It's my friend Niall, and he goes to the cinema constantly. He goes pretty much every day, and he goes to see every single film when it comes out, and. You know, the odd day there won't be a new film in the cinema or everything in the cinema is already seen. So he's like, all right, I'm not going to go. But when Star Wars comes out, he has a reason to go every day. Because he's like, well, if I've seen everything in the cinema, I'm just going to go and see Star Wars again. And I'm like, brilliant.
Yeah.
You have your unlimited card. It doesn't cost you anything.
Yeah.
Use it. Go for it. Brilliant. That's what fandom is. And that's great. But that trailer, as what a trailer is meant to do, to me was a failure.
Mm.
That didn't get me interested in it when I wasn't interested in it before. Whereas, I think if you can craft the right trailer, like Rogue One's trailer, that was like, to me, I was kind of like, it might be good, it might be not. I'm not that pushy either way. And then when I saw the trailer, I was like, okay, now that looks like something I'll go and watch.
Because it was something different, obviously.
Exactly, yeah. But also how the trailer was crafted.
Yeah.
It was showing stuff that I didn't expect of a Star Wars film. Like, when to me, that was like, okay, now it looks interesting. Now you've got my attention.
Mm.
So that would be the... That was a good kind of switch where they seemed to be recognizing that. Maybe it was because it was the first Star Wars film and so on, they had to do that with The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Okay. I hope they take the more kind of Rogue One approach in future ones.
I don't remember The Force Awakens being particularly strong or particularly weak. It was, which is, I suppose, what is your complaint?
Yes.
Like, it wasn't one to me, I was like, oh, God, this again. But it wasn't, oh, you grabbed me by the bollocks here, I have to go see it.
Yeah. Well, like you said, it was pure fan service, just like that movie as well.
Yeah, but I mean, the film itself was quite well done. Yeah. I think if they'd done the fan service trailer, do a 30-second trailer, makes me interested. Do the fan service trailer a week later.
Yeah.
And that type of thing, you know.
What did you have, Clive?
Well, I mean, thing is, I like to be surprised. I mean, I think we've talked about it. Like, for instance, I showed...
Show me his
video. I was surprised.
We were all so surprised. Didn't even know he was going to do it himself.
I showed Johnny a trailer for Get Out. Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
Basically, this black guy goes to meet this white girl's parents, and then it just seems very, very weird.
Not quite.
The whole trailer in itself kind of caught you, because you're like, oh man, this is some kind of weird horror/thriller film.
Mm.
And as soon as I went to watch the movie, I was like, what the hell is this? This is more of a horror slash comedy slash supernatural kind of thing. It was just completely different. But that trailer alone just kind of hooked me. But I was kind of pleasantly surprised when I went to the movie because it was something completely different.
Yeah.
Now, I think even South Park would be kind of... Do you even remember the trailer?
For South Park?
For South Park, the movie.
No, I don't remember it.
So basically, it starts off, this man, one day, you know, started drawing a mouse. And it was pretty much Walt Disney drawing Mickey Mouse. And then he said, this summer, that man will be spinning in his grave. And then it cuts to all the South Park clips, basically.
I remember them doing the full 3D, like, lasers drawing it, and then it zooms out, and they've been drawing Cartman. And it's just, like, the amount of effort they put into not showing anything in this trailer.
But that's the thing. It showed a good few clips from the movie, but there was no indication whatsoever that it was a musical in any way. That was another thing where, you know...
I think they kind of easy in, because the first song on that is Uncle Fucker.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you're like, I'm fine with them singing this. That's fine. Like,
great opening number, and then you're like, oh, hold on, this is just going on completely as a musical. Yeah. I was like, wow, that is brilliant. But to be honest with you, I prefer the more simple trailers. Just something that says, okay, that's what the movie is. Mm. Fair enough.
Well, on the Get Out one, because I watched it this morning... It looked like the Stepford Wives. It looked like a really good update of the Stepford Wives. This is going to be all, you know, thriller and mystery, and this is going to go on with a little bit of satire thrown in there. But if the description of the movie is, and then it's pure comedy, I was like, that's even better for some reason. The fact that it's like the Deadpool thing of them putting the Valentine's Day posters up to try and get couples in is like, no, it's not just that we're misrepresenting this. We're actually going to try and fuck with you a little bit.
No, okay, there's lots of blood. There is, you know, a lot of kind of a... horror elements in there, but it's one fella in particular was just a pure comic relief, and it was one kind of cinema kind of atmosphere where everyone was just bursting their whole laughing throughout the whole thing.
But it's like the greatest horror always has good like comedic moments in it, because it's a way for the crowd to, it's like in it, any good horror will keep you on the edge of the point where you're like, okay, now I'm too uncomfortable to continue watching this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easier, you can push that further, and it's easier to do if you have moments of levity in between. You have to give them the minute to laugh and then like ramp it up really high again. It's like I mean, you just said Deadpool. That does it in a way, and then I know it's not horror, but somebody said to me like, oh, I'm surprised there were so many flashbacks. And I was like, could you imagine that film if it was chronological? True. The first half of that film is just pure darkness.
Yeah.
Like, it is the most horrific, dark, depressing film. Like, you know, okay, you get the opening 5 minutes of him, like, with the guy with the pizza delivery guy. Great, yeah, funny. And then from, like, and then oh, there's a little 5 minutes of a love thing. And then it just goes dark for 20 minutes. Mm. And then, like, we get comedy at the end. It's like, no, it had to be told like that. And because of, it served two ways. You've got this really good, it's actually a really good love story. Like, the bit where he gets... the cancer diagnosis, and he used the line of like, he's just trying to memorize her face.
Mm.
And I was like, that's actually really, really good writing.
Mm.
And it's really well done, and it really properly shows the character of Wade Wilson. Like, because I've been following comics for years, and you know, he's kind of been the darling of the internet for the last 5 or 6. But his character has always been that he jokes to hide his pain.
Mm.
It's not just that he's a smart arse. He is a smart arse, but he uses it as a... It's emotional a deflection. So I was like, that's, you know, that was some really heartfelt writing, and it's really well done. And then you have this film, which, it's a comedy and it's an action, but it's very gory.
Mm.
Like, there is that bit where he sticks a sword through a guy and then jumps and stands on both sides of the sword. And the first time I caught it in the cinema, I was like, did he just do that? And then when I watched it again afterwards, it was like, you know, and the screen, you know, it was on the screen in front of me, I was able to rewind and go, we did do that. Oh, and that's a lot of blood. And then, it's a good balance. And I think that's was it Jordan Peele who wrote Get Out?
Yeah.
So, like, from Game Peele, and obviously Van's an incredibly talented comedian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, I think it was, you know, it was natural for him to put in those moments. But that's it also gives a good contrast for the kind of more horror elements of the thriller elements of the film. Like,
I'm sure people in America were like, well, it has to be comedy. Like, he's, the fact that there's no comedy in the trailer is part of the joke. Like, it's so obviously comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
It'd be like the Americans watching Shaun of the Dead trailer and kind of going, I don't get what this is yet. You know, yeah. Like, oh, it'll be fine. You'll just go and see it. You'll
again, and that's another film that everyone remembers for how funny it is.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody remembers how gory it is.
Yeah,
true.
Like, you know, there is a character who is literally ripped in pieces in front of you, and you're like, brilliant. And it's just like,
I don't see a point of owning a car in London, and you're just like, that's a lovely little line. You know exactly who that character is now.
But it's from a tone perspective, like, for the, you know, the first three quarters of Shaun of the Dead, you're like, okay, a little bit of gore, quite funny, a little bit of gore, quite funny, and then like that happens, and you're like, okay, right, yeah, but yeah.
Cool, so for the second round of video games, I started with movies. Would you like to start with video games?
Video game trailers, oh, wow. Okay, I mean, obviously there's a couple of really memorable ones where, you know, just say for instance Gears of War. Do you remember the first trailer for Gears of War?
I do.
Now, it wasn't anything, you know, exciting in the trailer itself. I think that whole song, Mad World, just... That made it.
Yeah, you know? That is one that, because you were saying now that people will cut stuff over a song, yes. And they're just completely discordant. They don't match at all. It's just somebody kind of completely doing it. That was one I think was the first, and it's the first sadvertisement.
Yeah.
Where it was, this is an action game. Here's, we're like, we're going to show you there's a little bit more humanity to it or something.
Clive just stole him, I think, because he's like, Gears.
Oh, no. No. That wasn't even my pick either. Oh, that's okay. The thing.
Go on,
oh yeah, sorry.
So we'll probably talk more about Gears in a second.
Yeah.
But my personal pick would have been Mass Effect 3, cool. Take Back the Earth kind of trailer. I don't know if you remember that, but it was more of a cinematic trailer. So basically starts off with this girl in a field, you know, flare is everywhere, she's holding a toy ship. It looks like the Normandy. She's there playing with it. Then basically you see I believe it's London anyway. Reaper invasion starts happening. You see a sniper trying to save a wife and her kid running away from these husks. You see explosions everywhere. The city's falling apart. It's actually pretty cool. But then you cut back to the child. It's just very quiet. She's just there with her toy. Mm. And all of a sudden you see a huge shadow cast over her. She turns around and it's a giant Reaper going down into the field, which is absolutely awesome. Then you see the ship, and then it cuts to a ship lying in the dirt, and Shepard picks it up. And it's basically just him looking at a bunch of these husks coming at him. He just goes into battle with Ashley, starts kicking ass, and that was pretty much it. I mean, that, for me, hyped it. You knew right from the get-go, okay, Reapers are coming to Earth. They're going to try and destroy the Earth. You have Shepard, who's there to kick some ass, basically, yeah.
I think as a fan, it gives you chills. Like, you're like, oh, we're right back in the world, but I don't know who would be coming to that game without having played the original, but if somebody who is coming to that, they basically see it and go, there is a whole world here. There's so much going on in this, and, like, it looks like this big epic thing. Like, there's so much... It asks the right questions that kind of would bring you into the series, I think.
And there's no gameplay in that, is there?
No gameplay whatsoever, which I liked, personally, because... It was more hyping me up for the game. I didn't want to see too much of the game itself.
That's one thing I was like, I've not here like that. There's two main types when it comes to trailers. So there's ones that have elements of gameplay in it. Mm. Normally you see those in, I've noticed where you see them in for game series where people won't necessarily know what the game is. When it's more kind of, we have to show them a bit, because it's not like a film where, you know, you have 90 minutes of runtime and you're trying to take out 2 minutes of that while making it interesting but not spoiling anything.
Yeah.
Whereas this, it's like, let's actually, you know, we can show off a cool finisher, we can show off a little nice set piece, because it's only going to be like one moment that someone's going to play out of hours and hours. And then there's ones for the established genres, like, where they don't show anything.
Yeah.
Because it's a case of, like, they're not there to cater to the people who live under a rock.
Yeah.
It's like... You know, we're now two or three games into the series. This is one of the biggest series of whatever, last 5-10 years. You know what happens in this game.
Exactly.
You know how it works. We're just here to make you interested. Like,
well, it's kind of funny because for things like Halo, every new one of those, they were getting more fans. They were getting new people in, and they kind of had to do, come and join this place. Like, it was kind of like there is no backstory if you don't want there to be. You can just join in and start shooting people. Like, and every one of that was just visual feast. Like, here's your advertisement. Everything's going on. pick it up. Now's your time.
Yeah, but, I mean, you hit the nail on the head when you said there's so many different types when it comes to video games, because we had this discussion earlier where you have your cinematic trailers, then your in-game footage, but then you have the in-engine footage. Yeah. So and you're not entirely sure. Yeah.
And the lines blur between all those.
I was
saying the first time I saw, I was sitting in a pub, which was really weird, and I saw a trailer come on for Vice City, and it was in-game footage in the corner. And I was looking at it because I played San Andreas and I played GTA 3, and it was blaring Welcome to the Jungle or something, and I was just watching it, like helicopters flying, guys walking in the street, but no attempt, like it was 100% in-game footage. It wasn't the best graphics in the world. I was just doing it going, that is 100% in-game footage, and I swear I've been to all those places, like in different GTAs. This is 100% the game. And I was looking at it going, yeah, I better pick that up.
The one for me though, like there's kind of like, I have a few just noted here because it's like the different examples of each. So the one for with the has gameplay, I think we were looking at this the other week, was the launch trailer for Dark Souls 3.
Mm.
Now, in my head it's always Dark Souls 1, but it could have been Demon Souls where I first tried to get into the series, because I had been a fan of From Software from their previous game series when they did the likes of Armored Core and stuff like that, and I was just great games, and I was like, let's try this, and it's like, and obviously someone said, no, it's really hard, you got to be wary. I'm like, all right, well, that's fine. Like, I love stuff like Ninja Gaiden and all that. Like, let's get strong. Yeah. And I got killed by something very early on that I had no way of knowing was coming.
Mm.
And that pissed me off, because I was like, you've just done that, and I've been running for 10 minutes to get to this point, and you've just done that, and that's just kind of, you're just kind of lengthening the game.
Yeah.
And I was right, fuck this. I don't have time for this. I have so many other games to play. And I just kind of dismissed it.
No, the idea of you turn the computer around, huh, and just folding your arms and putting on like the same episode of Buffy again. You're like, this is stupid. I'm a busy man.
Well, no, it's like, you know, everyone's Steam library has more games in it incomplete.
Yes, complete. Absolutely.
So it was the whole thing where I could be playing something else and not being arbitrarily killed because the game designer wanted to make the thing 10 minutes longer. So, and I just kind of was like, I didn't have time for it. Whatever mood I was in, I was like, no, fuck this. And then, like, Dark Souls 1 came around and everyone was like, it's amazing. And I'm like, yeah, whatever, I don't care. And then, like, and then number two.
No, you're stupid.
Yeah. And then number two came out and everyone was like, oh, it's not as good as the first. I was like, ha. And they're like, what? And I was like, I don't know, just ha. But then I saw the number three was coming up and everyone was going on about it and I was getting huge reviews and I was like, oh, probably should go back and just give it another chance. I don't know. I'll give it a look. And I watched the trailer, which is the launch trailer, which is Ash Seek of Embers. And the only bits that aren't pretty much in-game footage were there's a couple of bits with text.
Yeah.
And it's done and it's like it burns and then it, like, the ashes blow away. And I was kind of like, okay. And I watched it. And it uses, and there's a song in it, and I was like, that song is amazing. And this trailer is amazing. Holy fuck.
Mm, that's a really good trailer.
And I look up the song and I'm like, it's Hozier. Oh, but I've listened to that album and it's not that, it's kind of alright, but it's not amazing. And then I was like, oh, it's only on the limited edition version of the album. Oh, okay. Hmm. I don't know if that's actually made me more or less biased towards this trailer now. Where before I was like, if it had been on the normal version of the album, which I'd listened through and then watched it, and I went, oh, they used him. But I was like, that actually works really well, and I like the song more because of the context in the video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, and because the song has influences from the story of the start of Dante's Inferno and stuff, and the whole one man's descent into hell, and I was like, well, that's kind of suitable for a Dark Souls thing. I ended up picking up Dark Souls, and I was like, all right, fuck it, I'll buy it. Bought it, played through it, loved it. I've gone back and played the others since. And I was like, and now that I've actually, like, okay, I was more in the headspace for them, I know I have to be in a very specific mood to play those games. I have to be like, sure, like, I'm feeling kind of masochistic today. Like
power, you know, bottom masochism, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, but, and then the other type then is the ones where you don't have, it's that the series is so big, you know what it is.
Mm.
We don't need to show you anything.
Yeah.
Now, there is some that, like, the ones that still use anime, like, they use in engine footage, as you say, would be like the Gears of War ones. Now, obviously, there was the first one. It showed a bit of combat. Showed him fighting a corpser and some grunts and stuff like that. But the one that got me was that for Gears of War 2, there was two of them. There was one which was Last Day, which is a song called How It Ends by Dvochka, and it's them sitting in a field waiting to go into battle. So it's like the calm before the storm.
Okay.
And you have like Dom sitting there looking at a picture of him and his wife, and even there's a bit where it's Coltrane is looking at a flare through a sniper rifle scope. And they're all just kind of relaxed, and the music again is relaxed, and it works, because obviously the design principle behind all, like the visual design principle behind all of the Gears of War thing, has been destroyed beauty. And it's even that whole thing of like there's nothing destroyed in that picture, but it's him, even like the fact that he's admiring this flare through a sniper rifle scope. I was like, that's nice. And then there was another trailer that came out alongside it, which is called Rendezvous with Death. And there's no real music, and there's a drum track that builds behind it, but it's actually a recording, as far as you know, of the poet himself, Alan Seeger, who fought in World War One. And it's the poem is, I have a rendezvous with death, at some disputed barricade and all this. And the trailer has combat in it, but it's not in-game footage. And just how that worked, the trailer, and like it was just the drum track starts off really muffled, and it's really quick paced, and it builds and builds and builds up. And then it stops very definitively, and as the drums stop, it basically ends with Marcus Fenix charging into battle, using a locust as a meat shield, and as it and guys start firing at him, and as the drums stop, like there's a bit of kind of dum dum at the end, and the camera just stops and cuts down, as if like you don't know what happens. We're not gonna tell you. The other one then, just for like when it doesn't use in engine footage or anything like that, in the Halo 3 Believe campaign. So by Halo 3, everyone knew what Halo was. Halo 3, my dad was playing Halo. So it was, you know, everybody knew what it was. Everyone was aware of it. And they did a series for the Believe campaign, which was...
Just on that real quick, my friend's dad used to play GoldenEye as stress relief. He was a very stressed man. He was on so many different medications for blood pressure and stuff. And we used to go over to his house, and he go, and he used to make Meccano, he used to make jigsaws, he used to try to do anything to get his mind off it. And sometimes he'd just go, actually, I'll stick on the shooty game. And he'd sit and he'd play the train level of GoldenEye over and over and over again. Classic. And as the guys popped out, it was like a little shooting gallery for him, because he'd already have the crosshair exactly where the dude's head needed to be. And he'd pop him. And I could see him just walk through that level without taking his finger off, move forward. He'd just like, da-da-da-da-da-da. And he'd play it three times in a row and go, I feel much better now. Go back to his everyday
life. This is the type of guy who, like, you know, he's making a sandwich, he's slicing a tomato, and it feels very therapeutic.
You come over, he's suturing it back together.
I want to cut it again. the Halo 3 Believe campaign, like, so there was the one that went out in the cinema and on TV and the likes, where... It was like just a piano piece playing, and it's essentially it's a diorama made of made with like toy soldiers essentially, and it's the Locust fight, not the Locust, sorry, that's Gears of War. It's the Covenant fighting the USNC, and it's all like they have like the explosions done and this guy's flying midair and all the rest, and it cuts across and it's a real kind of mournful minor key track, and it comes up and there's a brute holding up the Master Chief, and then just as the thing ends, the Master Chief's head looks up at the camera and he arms the grenade and it just comes with belief. And I was like, okay, that's pretty good, because, you know, you're just making people kind of like, again, it's the hype, the awareness of it. Because you don't, at that point, you don't have to show what the game does. But what I found out afterwards was, it was a series of trailers that were running in the US, and they were all live action. And they were all set about 50 years after the events of Halo 3. And they have these old guys that they're interviewing as war veterans. And they're they're like, yeah, the brutes were coming over that hill there. My unit was here. The chief came in from over here. And like, and you're looking at it. And then like, if it wasn't for the fact that they're talking about brutes and stuff like that, like, you would be like, these guys are in wars. Like, this is like one guy, half his face is burned from a plasma burn. And like, and like there's a guy who, like, there's this one where there's two of them, and one of the guys has to stop talking because he gets too emotional. And I'm just like, these are incredible. And they really went like above and beyond on it. But the whole thing combined, I don't think if it counts the trailer, when you put all the entire belief campaign together, it comes out around 18, 19 minutes.
Yeah.
Just because of all the, it's basically a short film
yeah.
to promote this game. And I'm like, okay, that's a thing, I suppose.
Mm.
But it was just, again, it was, it's I think it's the diversity with stuff like in games. You can't really do that in films.
Mm.
You can't make a short film to promote another film
yeah.
and have nothing about the other film in it, because people are just going to go, well, I don't see the point of that.
It is amazing that you've got up to 100 hours of content to frame, and you can kind of say, well,
I'm not going
to
show any of it.
Yeah, because we've put together 100 hours, we've had 300 people all sitting in a room, all thinking about this world, all talking about this world, all invested in it, all these artists creating art.
Yeah.
To then just kind of go, right, well, like it's a full thing. We all have lived this for a while. We know yeah. how to sell it. We know how to, and it doesn't have to be a very literal or overt snapshot of it. We can kind of sell the concept of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. Cool. What was your actual one there? Was it Halo?
No, it'd be the Gears of War.
Gears of War.
The Gears of War is the kind of the one that jumps out. And it was the Rendezvous with Death one.
Mm.
Just because it was the first time I'd seen poetry used
mm.
in
mm.
a trailer. Never mind just for games, for anything. And it really suited it, and I was like, yeah. Mm. Now granted, I was already sold on Gears of War. I mean, I used to play mm. competitively and stuff. So there was no way I was not buying this. Yeah. Like, in terms of getting me and doing its job and getting me to buy the game, the Dark Souls one did it. Because the Dark Souls one, I actually went, I suppose I'll give this another go.
I think while you were talking about the horror movies there's a kind of a moment of saying that you kind of have to intercut it with levity or intercut it with absurdity and ridiculousness.
Hmm.
That it's something that if you just beat someone over that, like I didn't like the movie Last House on the Left, because to me that was just torture porn and rape porn yeah. and everything like that. Because there was no let up, it was unrelenting. Now, I think, I don't absolutely hate it and think that it's absolute filth.
Do you mean the original
one? The original one.
Yeah.
Whereas I quite like things like Eraserhead, because even though it's unrelenting and oppressive and it beats you down, there are just moments in it where the ridiculousness gets too much and you kind of feel yeah. like just...
But yeah, but for you, David Lynch is your spirit animal, so...
Yeah. Just, it's an owl drinking coffee with his voice.
Yeah.
But, so with that in mind, the idea that you need to address the ridiculousness of the world, the absurdity, and nearly the nihilism in horror with a little bit of comedy to go then be able to go back and hit someone with it. I just think it's interesting that we've all picked video game trailers for like quite action-packed series that then have a very poignant ad where they're trying to highlight a different side of it. So again, in Gears of War, there's the Gary Jules song in one of the ads, and it's the first one that really...
It's not Gary Jules.
It's Mad World. It's
Tears for Fears originally.
Well, it's the Gary Jules version of it. Anyway, the one I was
child of the 80s, I will not stand for it.
Yes. The one I'm going to do then is Dead Island, which is
that's another one.
To me, is the greatest trailer for the worst game.
Yeah, that's
so see, which that, makes that's, the trailer even better.
That, yeah, like, yeah. I mean, the thing about Dead Island is Dead Island does the job of selling you the game so
yeah.
well,
yeah.
but then didn't release the game.
But if we're doing trailers, it is the best trailer I've ever seen. It's the one that I saw and was got like really excited, because it is. It starts with a girl lying on her side in the grass, ostensibly sleeping. Very like, again, starting with a child in a field seems to be a good way to say we're human. This is about humanity.
You know, I like the Gears approach. You know, for Gears 2 was to start with what is essentially a giant slab of meat in a field, because that's all they have. There's nothing else in those things. It's like, you know, it's, oh yeah, what does your game look yeah. like? Well, we have these guys who are fundamentally like 6 foot wide,
yes,
and 5.5 foot tall, and it's like, okay, it's like, yeah, our art designer had a stroke. Sure, go with it. It's unique, it's stylish, and
yeah.
what do your bad guys look like? They kind of look like, you know, a Cenobite meets Rocky Dennis from Mask. Sure, cool, let's go with that. Like,
the kid stuck oatmeal to a He-Man. That's kind
yeah.
of but no, in the Dead Island one, it starts with the kid lying down. I don't know if it's in a field or on a bed. I don't know if she falls out the window. And then
it's grass.
It all goes slow motion backwards, and it is this, again, it's a better short movie. The whole series has a better short movie than it does any game.
Mm.
But it's her very slowly coming back, and bits of glass start reforming and comes up, and she's had fallen out a window, but like the window reforms and she comes back and she's on someone's shoulder, and then you see a guy with an axe and a girl in a bikini with blood dripping from her face, and it's all moving backwards, and you're
I thought half of it was, is it not like, is it not, does it not end at the midpoint? Does it not intercut between
yes.
the start of the trailer so and the end of the trailer?
And then it's events moving forward and events moving backwards mm. and events moving forward. And the point of the guy picking up the little girl is where they meet.
Yeah.
The point of her getting to the door. And it's this really, really poignant thing where you're so invested and you're seeing both the aftermath and the lead up to it. And you don't need to explain zombies. Everyone knows what zombies are. Yeah. You don't need to explain what's going on. The background is in this beautiful resort. You're in paradise. Zombies have taken, like, attacked. It's very poignant but driving music. And you're just watching it going, this is amazing. Like, clearly this is going to be story-driven. Clearly this is going to be... clearly this is going to be about the human aspects. Clearly this is going to be, like... There are some games that surprise you, but there are bits in Red Dead Redemption that I really felt like, well, this is some of the best storytellings. This is some of the best... Yeah. Human drama, this is some of that, like even the some of the song choices, I'm like, this is really emotional. Yeah. So it can be done. And I was like, if they're using zombies as the setting, it's not something I've seen before. And the game was just fucking shite.
Now,
it was terrible.
Here's the thing. Is the game shite or does the game seem shite because the trailer made it seem so amazing?
No, it was shite.
It was no, it
like
was.
if that game had come out and you hadn't heard about it beforehand, you hadn't seen that trailer and someone turned to you and went, playing a game the other day called Dead Island, it's not actually that bad.
Yeah.
And you went and played it, would you have been like...
If the game was called Zombies in Paradise, and the trailer was like about like a TV show from the 90s about like, you know, in a world where zombies are just a... are just a quick shamble away. these merrymakers had to fight. If it was that, I'd be like, yeah, I'll play that game. That seems like a thing.
I guess at the end of the day, the advertising department did their job.
Oh, yeah. People bought
maybe
the game.
Maybe want to buy the game.
Yeah,
bought it.
But that's what I'm wondering. Like, did that... Okay, so say that game got a review of... A Metacritic review of 70. I don't know what it is, just off the top of my head. If it pulled a number out of Maris, it got a review of 70. Would it actually have gotten a review of 80?
Absolutely.
If the original trailer was gameplay of you running through baseball bat and zombies in the head with Andrew WK's Party Hard playing in the background, which would have suited the game more.
Yeah.
Like, would suddenly people have been going, you know what, it's really fun, doesn't take itself too seriously, seems kind of a laugh.
Yes. Grand.
Very good point, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the doing your job and then doing your job for a different game that you never actually made is kind of...
So, every so often, this one of the ones I go back and watch that trailer every so often and go, remember how good that trailer was? Watch it and go, I can't... But in my head, I still go, I can't wait for that game to come out.
That's the thing. When I was looking at my list today, I was like, there's no point doing Dead Island. Someone else will mention it. Or if not, it'll be the one of like, and at least they didn't do a Dead Island. Like, so.
Brilliant. Cool. Then for TV shows, Glenn, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, well, like I was saying earlier, the majority of like trailers for TV series in Europe in English language TV in Europe have never been that big a thing I've noticed. Over the years, I used to watch a lot of TV growing up. A lot of the times, you just have a generic kind of, this show is on, and they're showing you stuff from like 4 or 5 seasons worth of it. It's not for a targeted series or a targeted episode. And I appreciate that it's different over in the likes of the US and that where they have better adverts.
Mm.
These little kind of, and I really appreciate the little kind of 15-second.
Yeah.
We're just going to give you the bullet points of what's going to happen without really showing you anything. You're going to want to watch it.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But I've noticed that like, it's only since Netflix have started moving into the realm of TV series that I've really gotten interested in how they approach it.
Mm.
And for me, it was the one that really kind of stuck with me is the House of Cards season 3.
Mm. So I never watched House of Cards, but it did.
Brilliant series.
When I googled it previously, it's one that came up as having a fantastic advertising campaign.
Yeah. So like, you haven't seen it now, so I don't want to spoil or anything. Or for anyone listening, but.
Bruce
Willis
is a ghost.
Spoiler
alert at the start.
No, there will just be a spoiler alert at the very start of this. So because it's essentially Frank Underwood, Kevin Spacey's character, the Spacey, who just everything just becomes him now. I watched like season one of House of Cards very shortly after playing the entire campaign of Infinite Warfare, which he's in, and I'm just like, the Spacey is all whatever, you know, like, but he's, yeah, that particular, that season is, starts off with him after assuming the presidency, and it's all like it's him essentially trying to manipulate and gain control of it, to his means. Now, that original trailer used, again, it's the use of a song.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the song Counting Bodies Like Sheep by Perfect Circle.
Right.
Now, that was on the album Emotive. Now, the song itself is actually a remix of another Perfect Circle song.
Right.
The original one was called Pet. And the song, the line, Counting Bodies Like Sheep, the Rhythm of a Wardroom, is in the song, and they kind of made a song out of it. Now, the original one is very kind of a Perfect Circle style, you know, kind of alt rock, you know, very good song. But then when they did the remix one, it's all done to like a military drum beat.
Oh, nice.
But it's a real slow pace, and it's like boom, boom, boom. That's real kind of marching music. And the original video for it was essentially like a little cartoon, because it was a fan competition thing, and the one that won was a cartoon of that was a critique of the and the song itself is a critique of the reaction to 9/11 and stuff like that in the States. Right,
yeah.
And the video was very much an animated George Bush sending people off to die in a war, and it was this whole you know, the evil president thing. So then when I see it used in this, and like the Frank Underwood character is very much you know, he's the antagonist of the show, but you root for him all the way through. And I was seeing this, and I was just like, this is just really, really, really good use of it. And it was one of the first TV trailers for series that I was like, not only did it remind me that it was coming on, but I was suddenly like, I now have to watch this.
Yeah, yeah. That's
it's right. Not something that like, because sometimes with series, I'll wait and I'll let them build up for a few episodes, and then I'll watch them. And I know with the Netflix series, you don't always have to do that. But I wouldn't necessarily watch it the day it came out. But I was like, no, I have to watch this now the day it comes out.
Yeah.
And it was just that driving drum beat to it, and that particular song, and the use of it. And I was just like, this is just perfect. It just suits the atmosphere of it really well. But in general, they do very good promotional work for it.
Hmm. On your point there, those little 15-second spots, and even shorter 10-second spots, I love watching the American Horror Story ones.
Yeah.
And there's entire YouTube ones of like, you can do the entire seasons of them, and they'll do 30. They'll do loads and loads of little short ones, and it'll be a nun drenched in white standing in a room while a gimp stands on a wall so that there are perpendicular angles like an Escher painting, and then he opens his mouth and white fabric comes out, and then it just comes up AHS. And you just watch it and go, brilliant, what?
See, I'd see that and I'd just be going, is this a perfume? Because perfume ads are always fucking ridiculous. It's like you're trying to convey something like that you have to smell with it through a medium that has no way interacts with your sense of smell. So I'm like, yeah, I have no idea what's going on here. Like, so.
But for the Asylum series and for the Freak Show series, they did a brilliant, brilliant stuff, even for the Coven series. And but there'll be ones, I'll watch them now and it'll be like, weird sounds, really, really annoying. If you're just finished watching an episode of Friends and you're going to watch an episode of Cheers, and then you see a woman's mouth open, a centipede crawl out and crawl into another woman's mouth, and then it cuts back to Cheers, you must think you're going insane.
Yeah,
it's a schizophrenic episode. Because you're like, what just happened there?
Mom, the TV's gaslighting me again.
And they're starting a new series now, and I'll probably watch it. The last series wasn't the best, but I'll probably stick it on. But like, I'm watching it for clues. I'm watching the thing to try to figure out what could possibly happen and like what they could possibly show me next. Which kind of leads into the next one. So again, TV shows aren't ones that would traditionally have trailers. So I'm kind of, this is more of a promotional campaign for something. But I really, really like the TV show Fringe, which was out in 2008. It was a J.J. Abrams and Fox show.
Good old Joshua Jackson, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it kind of followed on a little bit from X-Files and Lost and a little bit of Twin Peaks and...
Yeah, for some it scratched that X-Files itch though, didn't it? The whole Mulder and Scully
kind of... Yeah, it definitely did.
There was an X-Files dynamic. It's got one of my favourite openings as well, where the girl's lying in bed with like this other dude and they're clean-cut FBI agents. And as she gets out of bed, she goes, you know, I really love you. And I was like, he's dead. He's absolutely dead. He dies. Absolutely, he dies. It's like that. I've seen her in the promo campaigns. I've never seen him. That fucker's dead. But for their advertising, they started doing radio spots for Massive Dynamic, which is the company in the TV show that is the stand-in for GE.
Yeah.
And they were doing like spots for cars, and then spots for like these new medical procedures that can make you 8 feet tall and things like that.
Yeah.
And just making these claims were fucking ridiculous. But over them was like this whispering voice to go to imaginethepossibilities.com. And all this weird stuff. And it, again, it was an ARG. It was an alternate reality game that they started doing. And they've done them for Halo, and they've done them for Dark Knight. And it's to drive people to a certain website. And I think that it was a very clever way of doing it, because there's, if you've got something that's niche, that's sci-fi, thriller, mystery show, you can sell that to people and it sounds fun, but a certain kind of people will just go hell for leather for it. They would absolutely love it. And then word of mouth will spread.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, ooh, are you watching this? It's brilliant. So I do love that they were driving people to this website, that then there were all these case files that you could find and see crop circles and sheep acting weird, and none of it made a lick of sense. But for a particular kind of person, again, it scratches that itch, and they just exactly. started kind of going, what could it mean? And it ended with a big event in New York City where there was a big, they sold it as a scavenger hunt, but this was just the finale of the ARG, where a lot of people just figured out the clues, figured out the coordinates they were supposed to go to, and they met on Times Square, and this massive dynamic company had a little stall set up, and everyone's like, hello? And it's like, hello, are you here to possibly be an agent? And they're like, yes. So they gave you a little pack, and it was, you know, a map of New York, a bottle of water in case you got thirsty, you're gonna be doing some walking, and like all these bits and pieces. And you started doing it, and then like people were online chatting, and somebody eventually realized that if you read the ingredients on the bottle of water, it had far more ingredients than you would expect in water. Okay. And after a little while going down through them, it started giving you the clues, and you realized that the map you've been given wasn't what you were supposed to be doing. You were supposed to be following the label on the bottle of water. And then you were like, on the roof of some building and something else. And you went to another place where there was just a cow in the middle of the city with irregular patterns on it. And it was a QR code on a live cow and all these crazy things. And eventually you ended up on a rooftop somewhere watching the first episode, the pilot episode.
Oh, yeah, that's actually very good.
And they gave out lots of goodie bags and lots of swag and stuff. And to me, that like the idea that you start with little radio spots and end with that, and you're like, yeah, get out there and tell people. And he's like, you'll never believe what happened. I don't believe you. That's incredible.
But yeah, I mean, the only thing for me would be Game of Thrones. I mean, it's more of your traditional kind of trailer. Season one, of course.
Hmm.
I was already invested in the whole Game of Thrones idea. I'd read the books and everything else. That was fine. But I think it was very effective in what it was trying to do, where it kind of starts off with, you know, Ned Stark with Bran beside him, and he's obviously beheading this fella who obviously was sentenced to that anyway. But before he killed him, he was going on about the White Walkers and all that kind of thing. So he was obviously planting the seeds that, you know, there's going to be difficult choices to make. Something is coming. Who are these White Walkers? And it's just basically building what's coming, not just for season one, but for the seasons going onwards, basically, you know.
It's got a line in it that does grab you by the bollocks as well, which is, you know, he who passes the sentence should swing the axe. And you're like, fuck, like, this isn't, killing people is cool. It's, there's more going on here.
I mean, I think it helped that Sean Bean was in it, of course, but I think it,
he'll be in every series.
Because it did its job very well, because obviously a lot of people who didn't know what Game of Thrones was, didn't read the books, obviously started watching the TV shows. They're watching it religiously now. So for me, that would be my pick anyway. More of a traditional trailer, per se.
It's the HBO thing. They're very good at making the big event TV series now.
Like, yeah.
I mean, the earliest one for me that grabbed me from HBO perspective was actually Oz.
Yeah.
And I just remember like that just being a fucking mental show to watch, because it was every so often it would go from being, this is gritty realism, to it's a bit far fetched. When a guy sharpens his fingernails to the point where you can slice a guy's face up, I'm like, yeah, but no. but like again, that was their whole kind of their big exhibition kind of event series, and that was one of those ones that, like, I think T.G. Carr used to show it.
That's right.
Oh, wow.
And, like, it used to start at varying times, depending on how the sport went that night, on a Thursday. Because I just remember, because my dad would go out to the pub every Thursday night with his mates, and he'd come home with a bag of chips, and we'd sit there watching it. And it was a very odd kind of way of grabbing your attention, like, because their trailers, even back then, They you know, a couple of lines, a couple of flashes, and then it was more just kind of, they used to cut in a lot of their opening sequence with it. And yeah, it was, they were kind of, they had that down to an art then at one point, where it was more like, oh, we're showing you the stuff that you're going to see in the intro sequence, but it's like, okay.
I think those HBO shows, it was the last kind of big thing that everyone go and watch something and then come into work the next day
and talk about it. Yeah.
Mm. And Game of Thrones especially was one that everybody absolutely did that. And I think HBO were very, very good at using their initial trailer as like the first time people get to do that. Like they'd show you something, they'd hit you over the head with it, make sure everyone's seen it, so that everyone is going into work and saying, hey, have you heard of Game of Thrones? Have you, you know, have you read the books? Have you seen this? Yeah. It's out. People looking at it online. So that when they watch the first episode and it's a big event, they just put all the effort into the first one being a big event. Get everybody watch it, everyone talking about it the next day, and anyone who's missed it needs to catch up because we're watching it again next week.
Yeah. The Walking Dead, AMC pulled that off with The Walking Dead to an extent. You know, probably The Walking Dead is something fucking happens. So. But that's another story.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Let's all go home and think about what we did here today.
That's our show. Thanks for listening, and remember to check us out at Dystropia on Facebook and Twitter.